Welcome to Inside the Firm, a podcast dedicated to small business owners and hosted by entrepreneurs Alex Gore and Lance Psycho. Each week, they take you on their journey of how to start, run, and grow a business by bringing you inside their architecture and real estate development firm. Get a behind-the-scenes tour of how these business leaders manage their clients and foster company culture while creating new and innovative projects. And now your hosts, Alex Gore and Lance Psycho.
Yeah. Welcome to another episode of Inside the Firm. I'm your host, Alex Gore. I'm here with our other host, Lance Psycho. We are ready to rock and roll. We got a jam-packed schedule for you. We're going to talk about architecture, business, and everything like that. And if you if that's your game, you should go to buildabetterco.com, buildabetterco.com. That's where you can reach out to me and up your game in business.
Accurate data is crucial, especially in today's business environment. Outdated and inaccurate data leads to turnarounds, delays, and rising costs. With supply chain and staffing issues, these costs and delays can multiply. That's why a resource like ARCAT.com is so important. ARCAT works with manufacturers to keep their data up to date and accurate and offers it to you easily accessible and free. Use ARCAT's powerful search engine to find what you need and download it right there on their site without needing to pay anything or even register. So try ARCAT.com. That's it. Today, that's ARCAT.com. ARCAT.com. We're going to dive right in, Al Gore, back into where we sort of left the podcast off. But yep. I just wanted to do a little bit of a deeper dive on this topic, and that is the title of the article I have pulled up here is, and the show today is, how did architecture become such a poorly paid profession? And what can we do about it? Al and I were on a little call with one of my buddies, and right before the show, we were talking about all that kind of good stuff. So it dovetails in really nicely. We kind of went through the first part of the first third of the article in last week's show, but now we're gonna do it. We're gonna go a little bit deeper. So I am gonna read some of this article for the listeners who are listening terrestrially. You get to hear my golden voice. In the past, we were more respected. The relative decline in our pay has contributed to our diminished status. This is one of the reasons why the profession often struggles to make progress in terms of diversity. As architects become less valued in society, so aspirational young people from disadvantaged backgrounds are less likely to see architecture as an attractive and financially viable career. I'm going to pause right there, because do you think that's true? That's like quite an assumption.
Well, I wonder if people actually know, right?
Exactly.
And they might, because I've told this before. One of my friends way back in the day wanted to be a school teacher, but he said the pay was too low. So then he became something else. And it was always baffling to me, but because like, wait, what are you talking about? Wouldn't you be happier? Like, what's the goal here?
So now, switching over to LinkedIn real quick. Look what I got up here.
Yeah.
I love Steven Burkstecker. I think if you're not following him on LinkedIn, you should, because he posts really great stuff. He's sort of in the same cohort as Tyler Suomala. And I just one. So like I, you said, I wonder if they actually think that like here you go. Lance, minority Lance, yeah. Lance, federally registered Native American. Yeah. Did he know that architects don't make a lot of money? I mean, frankly, did Al know? Like, I don't know. I don't know what you knew. I know you knew one architect growing up, right?
Yep.
Because one of the friends. Okay.
Matty P's dad.
Matty P's dad. Yeah. One of the besties. Yeah. And so Steven, he's got here on LinkedIn, 10 myths about architects that most people believe. Number one, we are rich. I get this one a lot, he says. The assumption is that because I'm an architect, I make bank. You can make good money in architecture, but it ain't a default, and it usually takes decades. Don't become an architect if money is what you're after. It will disappoint.
Okay, can we pause there? Go back. You can make good money in architecture. I believe that. Yeah. Because think about this. If you're choosing, okay, do I want to be an architect or an accountant? Accountant is less work and makes more money. Well, then, are you the kind of person that should be an architect?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the other analogy is these very smart people who decide to go into banking because it's more money instead of like creating a company. And it's kind of a talk in Silicon Valley, because it's like all these smart people who know how to do things, like the banking sector is just eating them up. And from my perspective, the banking sector is a lot of just funny ways to take people's money once you get to those higher levels. Sure. So like it's a net drain.
Yeah.
It's a net drain. So since I don't think like that, it's hard for me to be like, to weigh my future and be like, okay, which one has the possibility for more money when you were younger? Now, when I'm thinking about it, it's like, okay, how do I position myself so that we're strong financially and keep growing the money? But when you're younger, I don't know. I don't know why I'm hung up on this.
No. I know why you're hung up on this. Because I think, you know, okay, you write articles, if you make memes, if you make films, if you write articles, if you're creative who's doing those things, and the reason I bring up the memes is like, when I make memes, I still do. They're mostly Barbie memes now. But when I was making the political ones.
They're Knuff.
They are Knuff. When I was making the political ones, it was always the big discussion of less is more, right? You have to, if you can't say everything in the meme. And so you have to make some assertions if you're ready. So I'm trying to be empathetic to the author here, but I get why, but the hang up is on that part of it where it's like, okay, I think we should probably give more credit to maybe young people and young people who are minorities too, are like the people we want in for more diversity, women in the profession, the whole thing, right? Yep. Is like, wait a minute, like, don't they probably think about more than just the money part of it? And then they think about, like, for me, I'm thinking about two other extra things that I thought about going into this profession. And it was, how do I make it so I can do cool work? I can do work that's meaningful to me and then society at large, right?
Yep.
How do I, basically cool architecture, like uplifting good architecture that you walk into a building and go, ah, this is sick, even if it's like one space, you know, and you just feel better about the whole situation. It was like, well, the quickest way to do that is one of two ways. For me, it was started a small firm. That small firm went bankrupt, essentially. And I could have, I was getting some of that work right away, like more control over the work. Like my trajectory towards project architect would have been faster. And the second way is start your own firm.
Yep. And I think here's where the rub comes from. And it comes from what perspective you're in. When you're choosing to go into architecture, normally you're young, and I think you have that more idealistic bent. Once you go through college, and then once you apply for jobs, and maybe a couple years after jobs, I think that's where people get heartburn. Mm. Because they go, hey, I know my friends that are business major, English majors, engineers. They don't work as hard as me. We're just as smart. And why are they making $20,000 more than me? And they work less at their job. Like, that's where the heartburn comes at. Why are they making $20,000 to $40,000 more than me, and they're working less hard?
Yeah,
that's the issue. And then I wonder the reasons. Here are the reasons.
Yeah, we're gonna I have a third part. I have a third leg to stand on here with, like, the okay, if young people are thinking about architecture, there's a passion involved, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, money is probably part of the equation too, in that sense. But then you think about, you see these studies that come out a lot about, like, just happiness, and especially with millennials and Gen Z, they are pushing back in a good way about not wanting to work more than 40 hours a week. But that's, we stand on that here. Like, I make it a point to everybody, like, I don't, maybe some senior staff, they push it to 45 hours a week, but they just, but they're so invested, like, we try to get the investment of them and caring about their work, and they do, and the other people. So then they, that extra 5 hours is more of part of the passion bleeding into it, you know?
Yeah.
And then we, you know, give ample time off and all that. So there's that part of it too, is like, what about the happiness? Like, I think people do still want to pick professions for happiness. I don't blame them. Like, life is short, right? Okay. But here's the reasons later on the author is saying of why we have low pay in architecture compared to the other professions too. It's like, that's where it was. It was like, oh, at one point, yes, architect, doctor, lawyer. Now it's doctor, lawyer, banker.
Banker and tech.
Tech part. And then architect, whatever, you know, mid, I don't know. Here are some reasons for a low pay, he says. Number one, the supply of architectural firms has outstripped demand for their services, leading to a dropping levels of architecture fees. Don't disagree with that. Number two, the fact that other people can design buildings almost as easily as registered architects. Very interesting take. Number three, our inability to work for every sector of the construction industry.
Inability.
Yep. Inability, sorry. Yeah, let me just repeat that. Number three, our inability to work for every sector of the construction industry. Finally, four, The complete lack of any regulation or even advisory scales for the level of our fees. Okay.
I'll start that way. Man, if we wanted to up our pay, we should have just colluded like the real estate industry and had it ingrained that this is our fees and everyone does that. And basically there's no budging. And if you budge, you just budge a little bit. And it's
budge a little bit. Yep.
And it's literally from the moment you start architecture training, because that's how it's in the real estate.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could have colluded. And then the whole association could have got sued.
Which they did.
Well, yeah. But then like everyone in the AIA, you know, like.
Yeah.
So that one's out.
And we've already tried it.
That one's out.
And we tried it. I'm kind of surprised. And this, for the record, this is a article from the UK. It's a UK publication. So maybe they, and the equivalent over there is RIBA, right? Royal Institute of British Architects.
Sure.
Versus our AIA.
Yeah.
So maybe somehow this gentleman doesn't know about the AIA lawsuit that went through a long time ago. We went over many times in the show where they already tried to do that. They already tried to do it, right? I do agree with number one. I don't know if Al does.
Yep.
A lot of people going to school, a lot of it's a lot. Like, we glamorize architecture. Right? And how could we not? I mean, it's glamorous to live in a cool house. It's glamorous to work in a nice building. It is what it is.
Yep.
Right? And then now you have the universities. So you have the universities with these guaranteed subsidized loans. That's actually part of what I'm getting at with the problem is like, okay, almost the barrier to entry is less and less and less because the idea is we want to be more equal. I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with making a level playing field for sure. As much as we can in life, right? Like,
yep.
Giving people equal opportunity. But the barrier to entry that we should talk about more, that was like, we subsidize the entry, essentially, right? Like we subsidize the entry. And what came with the subsidizing, besides just way more, probably too many people going to school, probably too many people want to be architects, too many people starting architecture firms, is then back to the glamorous part of it. Like, I walk around CU Boulder, and frankly, actually on the main campus, even NDSU now, and I go, holy shit, these buildings are like unbelievable. How much money are they spending on these new buildings? They're just, you walk through, I think even like any new campus building that I go to at this point now, I go like, is this a luxury hotel? Like, what is with the designer furniture? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And. Two, I don't think that would solve the problem, because I want to look at market forces.
Which part wouldn't solve? If less people went?
Yes.
Okay.
And
sure.
Here's why. At first, sure. I thought yes. But
sure.
Then I thought, wait, market will figure out a way. And developers and homeowners will figure out a way in two ways. If you're a big developer, you'd be like, nope, I just need to hire one architect. And guess what? We'll get drafts people under that architect, and we'll execute that way. So if the universities aren't going to supply it, I'm just going to get people under that architect to stamp it, right? The homeowner and homeowners are going to lobby for, like, why do we need an architect? And maybe they won't. Maybe they won't. Why do we need an architect to go through this whole process, right? What I'm getting at is what makes something more people get paid a lot, right? So doctors, there is capture. There's government and monopoly capture on that, right? For the tech, it's basically you can apply that because it's movable. Your tech is movable to a large portion of the population, and it's winner take all. So all the people, all those programs that didn't win, all those hours that of programs that are defunct and whatever, don't get counted in their salary because it's only like the winners that survive.
That's a skewed equation, isn't it?
Isn't it? Right?
Yeah.
Right? So it seems ingrained in the construction industry that you have your construction GC fee anywhere from 12 to 24%, right? And it just depends on the complexity and all that. And I understand that. And people pay that because construction's hard. It's hard to find good contractors and stuff like that. They're not paying that because, again, there are so many good architects that you can choose from, and there is competition,
so
which then leads back to, oh, should we limit that supply? I think that it would still flow through if university was too much. I almost went to a tech school and became a drafter until I saw their graph, and it made no sense whatsoever.
Of pay?
of pay.
Yeah.
Of pay. Because I said, as a drafter, you start out higher than an architect. And then you looked at the graph and you're like, yeah, but in 10 years it crosses and the architects and keep going up.
And it could be a hockey stick if you do it right.
Yeah.
Yep. You can become Richard Rogers, super champagne socialist millionaire.
Yeah. Yeah. But Norman Foster. I mean, the dude has...
Oh, my gosh. Exactly. Honestly. Yeah. A lot of people who own firms do just fine. They do just fine. We do just fine. Okay. On to the market, actually. Architecture is now solely a market-driven profession, especially since public sector architect departments have all but disappeared. And this marketplace is an increasingly crowded one. Just between 2014 and 2020, some 8,000 architects were added to the workforce. This is partly the result of greater numbers at architecture schools than in the past, and that so many of these students go on to become registered architects rather than diversifying out of the profession with their architecture degree usefully in hand. So, I don't know. The resultant number of available architecture firms today has been seized upon and manipulated by our clients who have honed the art of making us compete to achieve a holy grail of high quality coupled with low fees. The only way we can survive is to undercut each other in order to find enough work to keep subsidizing hand to mouth.
I go back because think about this. Electrician, right? Electricians get paid a whole bunch. Plumbers get paid a whole bunch.
Plumbers crush.
Right? And my argument falls to the wayside because, yes, maybe there's not enough supply of them. So maybe the supply of architects is too much. This is where it falls through. Like, oh, I don't want to pay them. So maybe I'll do... My dad does his own electrical work. I'm sure I could figure it out, right?
You could.
I could do some of my own plumbing work too. But then once we get into anything that isn't your own house, it's like, there's no way.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way. So maybe it is true for architects. Yes, maybe some of the house, single family house stuff will get done by draftsmen and drafts ladies. But once you get into complex stuff, you need that architect, and there's too many of them.
Yeah. Okay, here's sort of an opposite take in the next paragraph, in the next section of the article, which is, so he's titled it, in the main, that we therefore do not engage with clients whose tastes don't align with ours. We architects are generally selective about the work we choose to do. We revere modernism when the public in the main is skeptical of it. We sidestep neoclassical architecture, even though it is liked by so many. In the main, we therefore do not engage with the clients whose tastes don't align with ours. We have never had a good relationship with out-of-town house builders who build so many of our homes. This avoidance by architects of certain sectors allows non-architects to easily grab up the work we are turning away from. Good take.
Good take.
Yeah.
Hot take. Love it.
It's sort of like Al was saying in the last part of, oh, at some point you're going to need an architect because it becomes at that level, right? It's like, just imagine you're going from residential to commercial. Boom. You're all of a sudden into an architect for regulations, because of regulations, and then also mechanical engineer, plumbing engineers, and all that stuff, right? But yeah, then there's the opposite thoughts. Like, we were told in college, which is completely false, because then we ended up actually going for that kind of work, the out-of-town house builders, and doing like four or five house plans for them, and then they repeated them and all that good stuff. I was told in school that architects don't do houses, and it's like, I got to Colorado, I'm like, seems like a lot of architects are doing houses. And matter of fact, builder level houses like Lennar or whatever. We didn't work for Lennar, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I would encourage more architects to take on that work too and think about how you can make a bigger impact on society. I was just telling my students, again, I feel like every time I go up and go to studio, or at least once a week, I end up telling them, sometimes all you get is the floor plan. Like, that's the project, and you better crush it. So you better get better at floor plans here. Like, it's unacceptable to be a bad space planner.
Yep.
First and foremost. Everybody should be a good space planner. I will stand on that absolute language as an architect. Next kind of big section is, we do not help ourselves so much by so often competing in inappropriate architectural sectors.
What does that mean?
But the word of development, which has a lot of choice elsewhere, will not tolerate these institutions fixing our fees. All REBA and ARB can do to fight hard for the brand of architecture, which in the main they successfully do and rightly hold up the standards of professionalism expected from us, especially in this complex regulatory world. Our clients could take it upon themselves to improve our fee levels if they wanted to. The public, they have the market to contend with. The public sector could be forced by law, to make procurement fair. The private sector might be shamed into following suit, but it is not in either's interest to do so. And anyway, the last thing on this present government's mind is to make sure that architects are better paid. Alternatively, the whole architectural profession could club together and refuse to enter flawed competitions. We could also point blank refuse to undercut another firm, but how are our younger firms to create a portfolio of work if they can't compete in an open marketplace?
And too, if you regulate it so much, it becomes like the military industrial complex, where all of a sudden, like, what is the incentive to innovate, to make things streamlined, to be lean and all that? And if a firm is, and let's say a firm has dedicated themselves to be a lean, mean design
machine,
also and production machine, and let's say it's in a particular area.
A lean, mean design machine. I got it right there.
Yeah,
keep
please
going.
Do. Ian, let's just say residential housing, but then the government says, like, hey, you have to pay 7% for an architect. And this firm is like, well, we're not going to win because we're young. They're going to pick the other firm because it's all about experience now, because it's all at 7% when we could really do it at a 4 or 5 and make great margins.
I love that counter argument, right? They're not always picking the low fee. That's a fact.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Experience still matters, everybody. Okay, there's 3 more paragraphs, and I think that'll kind of wrap this up. We do not help ourselves much by so often competing in inappropriate architectural sectors. If large firms compete in small firms' natural hunting grounds, those smaller firms are weakened. Likewise, why would a small firm try to take on a big project when they have little capability to do so? This crossing of territories is harmful all around, pushing fees downward and preventing the specialization that every practice so badly needs to be distinctive and competitive. Only the architects in the upper strata of our profession are reasonably paid. That is, as long as they are business owners or established senior directors. Ha 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 ha. However, the money at the top of the profession does not filter downwards very much. Our architectural foot soldiers who make up most of this profession remain lowly paid, and in mid-life hit a glass ceiling that's increasingly hard to penetrate. I don't disagree with that for the most part. In spite of the above, there's room for optimism about the future of our pay. The economics of our profession are already starting to change. Some smaller practices are becoming weaker because of the difficulties of keeping up with salary expectations, coupled with increasingly regulatory and insurance costs. This will see the strengthening of big practices. Ugh, this guy's like...
Okay, so a couple things too. I think we can also look within, and hopefully he has some, we'll go to some solutions here. And what I mean from within is that if you look at the AIA salary...
That's kind of the article.
The AIA salary calculator.
Yeah.
Once you get, you know, 4, 5, 10 years in, you're making decent salary. And I think we maybe need to realign who we're comparing against, right? If you compare against big bankers in the tech and all that, where it's structurally different, mm-hmm. then you might be disappointed. But architecture firms, if you limit them to a normal work schedule and you pay them that, it can be like 60 to 125K, and you're working 9 to 5, you're literally getting a creative job that's inspirational, that has a cool factor to it. And if you're working 9 to 5, like, think about people who are teachers. What are they making? 40, 50. Front office assistants, 40, 50. I don't know. Mechanics, like,
you have around 40, 50. Yeah.
Yeah. You have a nice job, a good job, where you're making decent living.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. So, cause that's, I'm not going to say who we went and toured this. I went and toured this fall with my seniors from North Dakota State, but there were 2 firms and I was like, they were gleeful about working 50 to 60 hours a week. They were gleeful about it. It was so goofy. I was like, this is not... So it's pointing right back to Al's point about that is like, I think when you factor in the extra workload that you're making people do, low and mid-level staff, and frankly, I guess senior staff should always be expected to kind of... Especially if you're like a partner and a CEO, like you just work more. You're already... It's a different kind of passion as far as the business goes, right? Yep. That's the counterweight to the whole situation. So I don't know if you're interested in trying to buck the trend of the sentiment of this article, is build a better co.
Yep.
go to Build a Better Co. Read Paul Akers' The Lean, 2 Second Lean, because so you can become a lean, mean design machine.
Yep.
RevitRocketShip.com. I think that's all we got for this week. If you like this episode and you want to leave us a 5-star review, please do that on the iTunes. If you're watching on YouTube, like, subscribe. We'll see you next week.